And hello, good people of the internet. It is I, Tommy Kelly, and this is Adventures in Woo Woo. This episode, we're going to do a Q&A where I got questions from my patrons and from people on Discord. I'm going to start off by saying that there might be my fan is on here, so there might be a bit of a hum in the background, and the door is open because I tried to record this video already, and within a couple of seconds, I was literally a ball of sweat from the heat that is in this office. Office is great that it's so warm. And insulate it so well when it's the winter months. Smoke so well when it's the summer months. But that's such as it. Most of the time I have the door open and the windows open and the fan on and it's fine. It's just when you're recording, you know, any sort of noise kind of adds to the background hum. But anyway, hopefully it'll be fine. So the very first question comes from Matte Bende over on Patreon. What's it like playing guitar again after a long break? Any plans about releasing albums, new songs, bands, etc.? Well, it's been very interesting because it's come roaring back, and it's been very odd in that how much of the music is an intrinsic part of who I am of being a musician, and how I had completely neglected that or forgotten that or let that go. And then when it came back, it was like just like, my God, this is so a part of me. This is like a huge kind of part of my soul that had not been or had been ignored or just kind of, you know, thrown away for many different reasons. The main reason just I started, I suppose, I lost all my confidence in it. That's the short and concise answer in it. And kind of felt I'd given up on it lack of confidence and given up. But anyway, since it came back, and it's come back in a different way, in that, you know, I don't have to be a rock star. I don't have to be all of these things that I used to think you need it to be in order to justify spending time doing these things, whatever. But as you can see from the montage of stuff that I'll put over me answering this question, I've turned one half of the office into effectively a recording studio or a music studio or a rehearsal studio. And that's been going really, really well. And I'm recording stuff. In fact, we nearly have a full song complete and we have a load of songs. I'm working with Enda, who does the photography with me. He's in one of the early Adventures from Woo Woo. Remember I was doing like the 40-minute weekly shows last year. He's in the one about we're doing street photography in Dublin. And he's in that. And he was in one of the very first bands I was ever in millions of years ago. And we kind of, well, obviously we've been friends all over the years, but we tried before to get back into music up 5, 6, 7 years ago, and we give up very quickly because it wasn't working for us. And we were kind of both jaded by the whole thing and kind of lacking. When I say lacking in confidence, it's like obviously we did loads of gigs and played in front of people and all that. It wasn't that. It was lacking in confidence of what's the point of doing this? You know, no one cares. In fact, you know, like there's a lot of gatekeeping in music, blah, blah, blah. Things I've talked about before in the vlog and I don't want to get into it because it's quite negative. And music at the minute is so positive for me. On a kind of practical thing, I feel I didn't lose an awful lot of skill from the time I'd taken up, like physical skill, whatever. In fact, I would say I have an appreciation of music that's slightly better than what I may have. I remember listening to tapes years ago of me when I was playing guitar when I was like 19 or 20. And I was like literally obsessed with guitar. And that was probably the best I ever was. And I remember thinking back on, Jesus, I couldn't do some of that stuff now. And I certainly still couldn't do some of the stuff, but I can play as well, if not better, than any time, like say, from my early 20s to my 30s when I was, and especially when I was teaching and all of those things. I don't know, there's different, the relaxing has kind of made it a bit easier or something. Getting the new guitar as well, I didn't realise just how important a really good guitar was. And I did it, like, I mean, I had a decent enough guitar. I had a Japanese Strat from a 1982 Japanese Strat. It's a good guitar, and I've recently, pointing at it off screen, Reeves toned it, painted it, stained it, that's the words, and it's all good. So yeah, I don't want to harbour on too long about the whole music thing, but yeah, album's coming, well, recording's coming, loads of songs written, doing well and enjoying the whole thing. Bought myself a early birthday present and bought myself a piano, which is wonderful, and I'm so happy. So hope that answers your question. All systems go, loving it, huge part of my life that I had neglected, and I'm really enjoying nourishing it, and 100% I'm blaming or putting all of this on Pan, because it all happened when I started annoying him. Steve Graves, how did the 47s come to you? Steve, this is a question I have been asked a few times, and I have answered it obviously a few times, but it's mostly in other people's podcasts, I suppose. The first opening chapters of the Grimoire of the 47s does detail it a bit of how it is. We're fairly concise, I suppose, in this, and not belabor the point too much. It came to me because it felt like I had every of my dreams, my hopes, dreams, and everything was coming to an end. I had kind of not doing well in the kind of self-employment, in the financial area of things. And I kind of felt that I was going to end up having to stop doing what I was doing and go and get a real job. And for whatever had in my head, whatever kind of scenario that had come up, it would be that I was going to end up, you know, brushing the streets, or being some sort of, you know, really kind of... I was going to say embarrassing, and that's not quite fair to people do it, but something that would be complete opposite and seem like a complete failure for what I want, just like the kind of the opposite of thing. And embarrassing for me, I suppose that's the way of doing it, that it would be degrading in some kind of sense. But that was what I felt was going to happen, that is it all, I had my luck, I had my time, I give it all, and it didn't work out for me, or whatever. But I had a couple of weeks or a couple of months where I kind of had enough that I could, you know, have one last hurrah, one last thing I could do before I went off into the sunset to sweep some roads or whatever was the equivalent job that I assumed, real job. And so I decided I would do something completely 100% selfishly just for myself, just something that would be for me, not trying to make money, not trying to prolong my career, not trying to get famous, not trying to any of these things, you know, not trying to be successful, not try to do the next big thing. If I had a couple of months and I was going to do something that I would be cool, that I could use, and that was the approach I came into this as well. I can do this, and I did it totally for me, 100% for me, for absolutely the most selfish creation I've ever had in my life, where I was not thinking about anyone else at all in regards to the creation of it. And it's just my aesthetics, what I thought was cool, what I needed, what I wanted around me, what I wanted to work with, what I felt was right, kind of conglomeration of all the different ideas and things that I had, you know, learned about and read about and interacted with and all of this kind of stuff. And so I launched it into the world, thinking a bit like my comics, that it would be, you know, 6-7 people would maybe buy it, read it, look into it, and then after 2 weeks, no one would care, and I'd go sweep some roads. And very quickly after it came out, it seemed that that's not what's going to happen, and ultimately, it entirely changed my life for the positive. So, yeah, so it was an act of, I was going to say an act of desperation, not an act, it was an act of a condemned man doing exactly what he wanted, without lust of result at all, other than wanting something for himself. So a perfect magical act in many ways. Joe Forrest, if you were to go beyond the veil tomorrow, what legacy would you like to leave behind? I would hope, my hope would that I left the world a little more healed and a little more positive than I found it. And I think in some ways, I have, in the people I've interacted with or whatever, but I've yet to do that in my own. I have a lot of shadow work around sadness and joy and that kind of stuff that I need to work on that a bit myself. But I feel I've spread, if anything, I've spread a little bit of joy and a little bit of peace, a little bit of healing around the world in my own little kind of way. And what more could you want than something like that? Good question, Joe. I'll have to think about that a bit more. I think we should probably think a bit about our legacies more than we'd like to think. What impact would you like to have on the world, even if it's in the only small kind of sphere of influence that we have? Greg McMichael. What book was the tip about the copper wire from the latest podcast? This is the podcast where me and Spud were talking about the Hat Man. And the book is Stuart Wilde's Simply Wilde, which is kind of an interview book. You know, one of those ones where he's given questions from people or I think he was interviewed and it was transcribed. And he talks about his interactions with the Greys. That was kind of the book where you kind of realise that Stuart wasn't just this new age kind of light and love guy, because he talks about like running after Grey aliens with swords and, you know, starts getting into stuff about the morph. He gets to get very, very woo, gets very dark. But the alien stuff, yeah, he's He said, the other one he said was projecting love at them, that rather than fear, which we kind of covered in the podcast about Hatman as well, that if you can kind of not get scared about it, and instead, you know, the opposite, you can, you know, project love at them. They tend to not like that or whatever. But it's all about, he was definitely reading a lot of David Icke, I think, at the time. So that's all that we have from Patreon. So let me go to Discord. Okay. IDCT321. I have a question. The beginning of this year was not great, and then it got terrible for me personally. Not because of any pandemic, just because just something going on for a while. Now things have settled down a lot more as I pick up the pieces. My question is about the vivid dreams that I've had since things have calmed down for me. They're always about the same themes and issues, and I believe I need more info because I feel I need to finish up some business and none of it is good for the other parties. Should they, these dreams, persist, do I act in them or wait for more instructions? That's as short as I can make it without sounding stranger than I need to be. I think you should take heed of your dreams to a point. I don't think you should, any of these things, say divinations, dreams, or any of those things, you shouldn't let them rule your life and make decisions for you. They're, you know, it's feel or think of them all as just information or conversation or advice from a friend rather than the word of God. Because remember, dreams are still part of your psyche, still part of your thing. While they may have a different perspective, it's still somewhat your perspective or whatever. That all said, if you are getting persistent dreams and themes, you know, do pay attention to them and do, if you can, act on them if it seems reasonable. Rather than, you know, like if your dream says kill all your friends, don't kill all your friends, you know. But if your dream says that you should probably talk to your father again after not spoken to him in 20 years, perhaps you should look into that a bit more. But again, if it's a reasonable request, now of course there'll be bits that comes up around this, that it might, like, what is reasonable? Does it, like, if it's hard, you should still do it. But you know, if it's tough for you, or you know, it kind of widens your horizons or takes you out of your comfort zones, that's, you know, still could be under the banner of reasonableness. It's just like, don't be one of the mad people, don't be one of the crazy people who goes, oh, it told me in a dream, you know, to, I don't know, set fire to the Empire State Building or whatever it is. Don't do that, you know. I don't know, if I get recurring dreams, I'll pay attention to them, try and find out what they mean. An awful lot of the time they don't mean anything and they don't seem to lead anywhere, and I don't know if that's just me missing the point, not getting the point, or whether that just seems to be the case sometimes. You know, same way it happens with magic, and I've mentioned this to Spud in the podcast a lot, particularly when we were talking about Helio, that there's this kind of seems to be a thing in magic where there's a huge build-up towards that seemingly an end point that never comes. And I often wonder, is the kind of apart from it being like a trickstery type thing, but is it that an awful lot of these things aren't necessarily for our benefit or for us, that they're for maybe possibly other things, or as I say, we've missed the point. But let me know how you get on. Jason, do you think that practice and being experienced in pulling larger amount of energy around make much difference, or is a novice just as capable as a veteran as far as manifesting with a sigil, god bothering, etc., assuming they follow the same metrics? I think it's practice is definitely a thing. I think experience is definitely a thing. In all things, so it has to be a case in magic too as well. Thing about energy, I don't know, because I have a somewhat energetic model of the universe, somewhat, but I don't go the full way. But I know people who are into the energetic model think that you should definitely have, you know, build up your energy, like do things like Tai Chi or, you know, Qigong or any of these type of things. And we have that recurring thing of this life force energy, like Vril or Prana or the million other names that we have for this type of thing. And yeah, like, I mean, even come down to what you eat, you know, the water you drink, exercise, all of this kind of, without getting into kind of a personal power Tony Robbins type thing, but like, I do think it all adds. And I do also think that some people are probably innately more talented at magic than other people. Although I have a constant debate with myself whether talent exists or not, and whether it's not just an applied interest, or people, the most talented people seem to be the people who spend the most time doing the thing. Although there's no amount of me playing baseball would ever have made me as good as some other people, or, you know, it seems to be talent in physical areas but I'm not convinced there's talent in the other areas. Although, like, say, think like something like mathematics, I have no aptitude towards it at all. Like, it's not, I don't even know if I'd be good at maths because I find it so dreadfully boring and I just can't get engaged in it or not. So I don't think there would ever be a case where I could work hard enough at maths or math, whatever way you would, math. I don't know. So I don't know. I don't know is the answer. Talents somewhat seem to be work and sometimes not. That's the best I can do. Another one from Jason. What's your thoughts on repeating a spell, sigil, etc., rather than just one and done? My thoughts are that if you're repeating the exact same spell over and over again and hoping for a different result, then that is the definition of madness. But augmenting it, changing it slightly, and having a slightly different attack, different approach, is the way to go. That's it, you know. And the but again, coming up with that whole thing, have a check. Is this a realistic goal? Is this something I can do? Would I be better off chunking it down into something smaller and working on a smaller goal rather than going straight to the lottery win or whatever is the equivalent long-term goal? But I do think doing the same thing over and over again, although that whole kind of thing of, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for a different result. But that's also the definition of rehearsal and practice, particularly with a musical instrument or, well, anything. If you're playing a guitar solo over and over and over and over and over again, eventually you will get a different result in that you can play it properly. So both your questions, I can see both sides of it. I personally, in practice, if I do a sigil and it doesn't work, I'd mostly drop it, I would say, or I would augment it, change it, and have a different kind of approach to it. That's a good one of is, rather than say, looking for the new job, doing a sigil for the new job, and say that doesn't work, do a sigil for a thing that you do only if you got a new job, like buy a bottle of champagne and drink it, and you're only going to do that when you find out that you've got the new job. That can be interesting. That can have a kind of effects that you're enchanting for the thing after that only occurs if you get the thing that you want. So try that. Abraxas, how do you view entities, God, demons, spirits, etc.? Man, this changes us dramatically depending on what time of year you're going to ask me this question. At the minute, I'm in an extremely skeptical outlook on life, almost a non-magical outlook, but not because I can't not have a non-magical outlook, but it's just the plandemic and the pandemic and the, you know, the mainstream of conspiracy and people just talking shit and making up stuff and, you know, deciding this things are true and how you just realize how people are, and I'm a person and so I'm including myself, I'm not just pointing fingers, how easy it is for us to believe stuff and, you know, to work out stuff or to get caught up in stuff that's probably not true, and just be really careful about the woo, because, and this thing I was talking about in Spud a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know what it was one of the ghost hunting things, and he was saying, like, it's that I seem, you know, he's the kind of believer that I'm the kind of a skeptic. My answer is, there's definitely something to this, and the more you kind of acquiesce to the ludicrous woo, to, you know, like the new age, you know, massive new age, kind of heightened new age kind of fluff, the less the seriousness or the less the real stuff will be taken seriously or looked into or allowed or developed or any of this kind of stuff. So that I can watch a ghost hunting documentary as entertainment, but not as a kind of, I don't think it's helpful towards, in fact, it's the opposite. It's not helpful towards trying to legitimize the proper stuff of woo. And looking into things more, like, say, I don't know, like remote viewing seems to definitely be a thing. Seems to be, you know, consciousness definitely seems to affect reality in many different ways. And yeah, but it's kind of got to the point where I'm super skeptical about everything at the minute. And that's just the phase I'm going through. And rather than trying to not, you know, rather than trying to not kind of, force it, whatever, just kind of letting it go and let, you know, being part of it and just say, okay, that's where I am at the minute. That all said, I do believe in hierarchies, and it's, you know, it's plain and simple that the likelihood of us being the most intelligent thing in the universe is very, you know, very slim. And so, therefore, if there is higher intelligence in the universe, why not gods? Why not entities? Why not demons, angels, all of these things? So in principle, I think they could exist. Whether or not they do exist, I don't know. I have no concrete experiences of anything other than my own head. And I know some people who have, and I believe them, but I haven't, so I don't know what it is. And also, I've had many a woo experience, but nothing that's kind of put me over the... Nothing that's made me in the kind of... So the Gordon White sense of becoming invincible. I'm not invincible in that sense at all. And but then there's the kind of other thing. It's like maybe gods do exist in the same, but like, what's the chances of us having any sort of relationship with it in the same that, like, can we have a relationship with ants? And that whole thing of, you know, getting their attention. Well, like, I mean, say ants did some match, you know, big ritual, and when, you know, someone went round clockwise, someone went round anti-clockwise in circles, and you came across, because that's super interesting, and you got their, they got your attention. But you can't grant them any favours, you can't make their ant lives any better, you don't even know what they're asking for, you know, it's like there's, you can get the attention, possibly, but can you communicate? I don't know. But sometimes you feel you can, so I don't know. Ganesha feels very real. Absolutely feels absolutely real. And it's sort of like most magicians will say that, even people who don't, you know, go for the actual anything outside the psychological model. I'm nearly sure Gordon, word for word, Gordon White says it on his website at one stage. And Alan Chapman, he, like, his books are dedicated to Ganesha. So... What do you think? What's your... I think you've told me before, though, to be fair. I think I do know what yours is. Serendipity. Okay, this could be... This is a couple of paragraphs. The podcast I'm remembering is probably from a few years ago at this point, even though from my perspective, it wasn't that long ago, because she's been... Serendipity, I think, since she... Maybe I'm wrong. They've been listening to them from the beginning up to now. I relate it to what you were saying about there not being firm boundaries between what makes something a god, a demon, or whatnot. Yet, at the same time, you mentioned you didn't work with demons, and it made me wish I would chime in with a conversation. I see more recent podcasts and lists where you work with Pan, but I haven't listened to them. Seems to me Pan has somewhat of a demonic energy to him. Tricks, though, possibly. Depends on what you mean by demonic. My thing with the demon thing is, and with Lucifers and all of these things, is that... When you decide that demons are good, when you decide that Lucifer's good or Satan is good or the good guy, all of these things, you have negated the archetype of the evil, and you have no kind of place for an actual archetype or a bad, nasty, shitty, evil entity in the world. And then you can kind of put that in Jehovah or whatever if you want, but it's still not quite the same. And there's no way that even if you... flip the thing, that you're going to make Jesus as the equivalent bad as what the Christians see Lucifer as, or Satan or whatever. So I think there can possibly be demonic, and we kind of feel that we don't want to in occult circles, whatever, you know, that see them as bad things. But maybe they are. I know certainly Alan Chapman thinks they are, and I know lots of people who just, you know, life, who claim their lives have been fucked up after working with demons and stuff like that. But yeah, Pan, no, Earth Spirit, very different. Good guy. But it depends what you mean by demon, obviously. The demon of malevolent. Yeah, so I don't see Pan as malevolent. My brain and my mouth don't connect to it. Benevolent. Not necessarily always in your favour, though. Spiriting has been of interest to me. In a lot of the material I'm reading, there are so many warnings, yet reading accounts you see wildly variable experiences. My own work is leading me to observe that this malevolence or danger of certain categories of entities might all be based on that practitioner's state of mind. Now, I would agree with you when it comes to servitors and all that kind of stuff of things getting out of hand, you know, the poltergeist activity and the lives falling apart and all that stuff. 195% definite that that's to do with the state of mind of the practitioner, because it mostly feels like, to me, in my experience, people who have those experiences already exist in a chaotic type existence anyway, where that stuff happens. If you have self-loathing, deep shame, rage, guilt, you struggle with, I could see how such entities I observe and could wreak absolute havoc. I totally agree. Absolutely agree. And it all comes down to whether you think demons are outside of your own mind or not. which again, I'm unsure, I'm not convinced. Crowley in his early days said they were part of your mind. He changed his mind later. So what did he learn in the meantime? But if you're in general place of self-love and agape, these baser entities don't seem truly scary to me. They just seem to have entities with more human-like qualities, which, just like human relationships, can be quite helpful if you're a good place going into the relationship. Warning there, though, because you can kind of get into a safe place where you think, oh, everything's good or whatever, and you kind of forget that there is going to be people and entities and things out there, let's assume that they exist for the moment, that will not have your best interest in heart and know how to deceive you and know how to make you feel comfortable in the same way humans can. And can, if they have a different perspective, can certainly see how to manipulate you. So be aware of that at all times. Not to be, watch out for that demon behind your head or that kind of stuff. But skeptical at all times. Like, sometimes you benefit from a wise, enlightened teacher or guide. Other times you need a drinking buddy to share some perspective with and embark on some shenanigans that may not strictly be best for you. But you want to go for the ride anyway. But if you're in a hella toxic place, these kind of perspectives are indeed in the danger zone. Yeah, no, I see your point. Absolutely. A lot of the kind of magic experiences seem to be reflections of our inner world, and that seems perfectly reasonable and, you know, a good kind of approach to take. With the caveat that maybe there is big bad things out there that do not have your interests at heart, and that know how to manipulate and get what they want, as seems to be how stories tell classically. What do you think? I know what you think. This is kind of a... I understand. I know where you come from. And it's just that... I'd leave it with that kind of thing that... I would come from thing that's probably inside your head, but maybe it isn't. Harry and Ago, I have two questions, although you don't have to answer both. I will. Have you given much thought about what magic actually is and why it works? Given your years' experience and practice, do you have any working theories as to what it is all about? And changes, consciousness affecting some sort of morphogenic field, like a field of energy, like a kind of like a matrix, I suppose, if you want to use those kind of words. Or if you're a dream, you know, the dreamer in a dream, so you magic a dream, but you're not the only dreamer in the dream, so you don't have full control, and being lucid and awake obviously makes it easier to change the dream, in the same way that being aware that you're dreaming in an actual dream gives you more control, but all the dream still tries to suck you back in at all time. I know it's a question, like, why, what is magic, why does it work? I think it's to do with will, intention, consciousness. Part of my brain thinks there's definitely a divine plan of some kind of thing. It could be a hell, could be in prison, and you're trying to escape. It does feel, and one of the kind of things that I do notice, you know, when you get kind of a glimpse of behind the curtain and you go, oh, that's straight, and then it's immediately kind of pulled away from you. But it's a game. The game thing is that it feels like this is a game. And I know at times I can feel like I'm winning the game. And they go, what? And then you catch yourself, and that kind of goes away. But it seems some sort of thing. So if it is a game, then magic is part of a way of navigating the game and winning the game. How do you overcome procrastinating when it comes to creative endeavors? I keep talking about doing creative projects, but I rarely take time to do them. That's because you don't really want to do them, and you just feel that you should do them. If you wanted to do them and you were psyched by them, you would be doing them. No question, because it would be enjoyable. You'd be gravitated towards it, and it would be the thing that would become what you want to do rather than procrastinate. Procrastination is because you don't want to do it. It's as simple as that. But it mightn't be just as simple as that. It could be. I noticed that my procrastination will be when I have to do something that's part of a greater thing that just don't want to do the next step. Like, I found myself was doing it with Unreal Engine when I was saying I want to learn Unreal Engine in order to to have reference and backgrounds for the comic, and it was kind of, there was something I didn't want because it felt like an awful lot of work and I had to kind of buckle down and do it. And then when I did it, when I started, it would completely open up and I spent hours and hours, became kind of obsessed with the whole thing. But it's that initial thing of, I don't want to do it, I don't want to do the hard work, I don't think this is going to be fun. And once I got my head around that, so you have to find something that you want to do, not that you feel you should do, that would be a benefit, that is how work, that other people will like, that, you know, might make some money or any of those things. Do something that is fun. That's your barometer of what your creativity should be, because it will be fun. Not to say it won't be hard work, but you'll want to do it. And hard work that you want to do isn't really hard work, in the same way hard work that you don't want to do is definitely hard work. So if you're procrastinating an awful lot about creative endeavors, find out why. Why do you not want to do it? What is the thing that, like, I suppose you could procrastinate because you're too tired and stuff like that. So maybe change that kind of lifestyle thing. But my experience is that there's just something I'm avoiding and I don't want to do it because it doesn't feel like it's going to be fun. It's going to feel like it's work. And sometimes you just have to do the work, like the Unreal Engine. Once I got like about an hour into it, I cracked the little bit of thing that I wanted and it opened out for me. It became fun. So there's some area I would suggest that's not fun. So find something that's fun. So that's the end of the question and answer for another time. We will be doing some 40 Servants readings next week, I think. So if you want to in on that, then join up to Patreon, any level, and you can submit your questions next week. And yeah, hope I answered your question. Serendipity, I'm not sure I completely answered your question too well. I will have to have more of a think about it, I suppose. Or we'll hash it out in Discord and have a longer conversation about it. So, good people of the internet, until our next adventure, be well and may your best days be ahead.